it seems to me, is that they feel that you have to be more careful when you're going down than when you're going up. This, I think, is basically what's the motivation.
But why?
You should
why?
Look where you're
why?
Going.
Why?
Because going down, in general, apparently can be a more dangerous situation when you're going up. I don't know.
If you're going up, you're looking where you're going,
possibly.
And you've got your back.
You've got gravity.
Yeah, gravity's the way you're
right.
Yeah,
right.
Not to Newton anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, okay. I've got a support movement.
Maybe because when you go up, you have to exercise more, draw in more force upon your movement. When you go down, you don't care about energy because the path was at least resistance. So you
that's also a good explanation. You're all good explanations.
No, mine is the best.
Yeah. Okay, we'll take a look at the first place verse where he simply gives a slightly different interpretation than Rashi does, and then we'll go on with the Gemara.
To make a general rule like that is kind of at least a wide latitude of it.
Needless to say, you're absolutely right, because as we'll see, they're not. It's Gedish does a glot, as we would say. I mean, it's not those rules, right? They're going to find objections to these things, too. They're going to be differences of opinion concerning it.
Not that I even understood that.
Yeah. You mean you understood this gate dish does a glot?
I got good.
I think you're improving on your Yiddish understanding.
All right. No, everybody had a good explanation. That's true. Yeah, either you don't pay so much attention.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. Or it's I mean, even I translated, yeah. Not going so smoothly, go but the, so it has no palm. The palm is gone.
Only for Jews.
All right. Okay. The first place was Elohim Agolin says, Hoyam Agaba Magela, right? So he says, Be a mayhem, show you Agag in Shovin. In those days, says Taisvis, the roofs were flat. This is really what he's trying
back
to say.
On the previous page,
the first of the Taisvis on the chapter, right?
Okay.
And the Loha Yumishupoyim, and they were not slanted. They were not sloped. Kemosha, don't know the way our roofs are sloped, okay? Don't forget, Tosfos was written where? In France, primarily. Okay?
Oh,
and in France, needless to say, they already had roofs like this because you have snow and rain and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, where the Mishnah was written, there, you don't have, you hardly see any snow, and while you have rain from time to time, but it's not so gefährlich either, you see. So that's why the roofs were different.
When did the domes come in?
The domes?
Yeah.
Oh, they've been around a long time.
They weren't there
before. Oh, they were there in the time of the Romans, but probably even prior to that.
So,
But they weren't used for private homes.
No. Yeah, they used domes for private homes, sure. The way you see houses, with stone domes and so on, actually it serves to keep cool the house on the inside from the blazing sun. That's one of the advantages of it.
But what we're saying here is that most of the houses were flat. Is that what?
This is what Tosfos says, that in those days the roofs were flat, okay? Not like ours.
Well,
and
you remember this from one of my favorite stories. When David sees Beersheba, Beersheba's taking a bath on the roof.
On the roof, absolutely.
With a certain lack of apparel. Now, she couldn't have done this if it was on a diet.
Yeah, correct. Of course. It reminds me of, in New York when people used to live on the roof in the summertime over there.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't the Torah say to make a fence around
the roof? Of course, absolutely.
So
we're supposed to make a fence around it because people actually stayed on the roof. To prevent the fall, you had to make a fence around it, of course.
Yeah.
And that is interpreted, to mean not only make a fence around the roof, but also it means that you have to take every precaution to make sure that people are not going to have accidents.
Right.
If there was a fence around the roof, how come the roller fell off?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a very good question.
What's the roof?
If there's a parapet,
apparently this was still at the time that they were making the roof and they hadn't put the fence around it yet.
Good answer. Right.
All right.
Good. Right. True. Probably.
What?
Rabbeinu
Tam is one of the Balei Tosfos. Yes.
Good answer.
Yes.
Right.
Correct. He was Rashi's grandson. But, Rashi had other great grandsons, too. Yes, like the Rashi Bomb. So, yes.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So, it says, Shehosin Agag, Tochenoso, Betit, right? The same as the Rashi had said before. smear this like plaster or something, or clay upon it. The rotsim lahashvos tiachagag, and they want to smoothen out and make it level, right? So the lokan evel agula aruka. So they take a long, round stone, aruka ktsas, slightly long. The yeshlo beishinayim arukim, and it has literally two long teeth. In other words, like two handles, right? Like handles, right? He calls it teeth over here, but it's like a handle. And what happens? Yes, pardon me. Ma'aglin osap they call agag, and they wrote it on the entire roof lahashvos in order to level it. The hainu ma'agil, and this is what we mean. So basically, what is the difference between what Rashi and Tosfos are saying? Tosfos says it wasn't like a piece of wood,
right.
Rashi said, but it was a stone. All right, so. Okay. So it doesn't make any difference. It could be one or the other. Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's continue now with the Gemara. Yes.
That's what, yeah. Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me. In other words, they had like a whole wall of material.
Yeah.
And they flattened it.
Yeah, all right. So they flattened them, sort of like a steamroller, what they use today. Same idea. Yeah. Or people I've seen, for example, let's say they want to fix up the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
So you put the gook down over there,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you take something and you smooth it out, in order to let it harden. So that this is the way they worked it. Same idea. Same basic idea. Okay. All right. Now the Gemara asks the following question. It says, "Menor Hanimili." Where, in other words, do we find in the Torah, justification, if you wish, for what we're saying? So, Omar Shmuel. So Shmuel says the Omar quotes because the pasuk says by Yapel Olav Vayomos, right?
Hmm.
In other words, literally, he caused it to fall upon him and he died. That's the literal translation. Okay. And they take the word Vayapel in the sense Ad Sheyipol Derech Nefila. Until it falls, and therefore this shows us that it has to be something that was falling down. Okay. In other words, the word vayapel they take in the sense of yipol. I mean, when it comes to a drash, you don't necessarily have to go according to the literal meaning. In the drash, you can also derive another meaning simply by the fact that the letters are the same, but it could be interpreted in another way as well. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Our sages taught, and of course, whenever it says Tana Rabbanan, means that they bring in usually a baraisa or something like that. And what does this baraisa say? It says Bishgogo. It says, right, in error, literally, or we said inadvertently, so Prot Lemezit. That, in other words, excludes the person who purposely wrote it. Okay? Bivli Das, without any knowledge, so that's Prot Lemezkave. This excludes the person who had every intention of murdering. Mazed, right. Miskavin, mazed.
Right.
All right. So, they say, Pshita, for this I need something, to tell me that he should be put to death. Barkatolohu, obviously the man deserves to die, right? So, what are we trying to establish over here? So, Elo Omarova, but Rovo, maybe it was Rabo, because that's what the note on the side says over there, because it's a similar statement in Sanhedrin over there where it's Rabo. Okay? That Amor, say rather that this excludes the person who says that I killed him because I thought it was permissible to kill him.
That's a.
Yeah.
You lost me. No.
I don't understand that.
One comes to
Bivli Das. What do we mean by Bivli Das? Okay. Without any knowledge, right?
Yeah, okay.
In other words, without any knowledge means that he killed them because he didn't know that there was anything terrible about it. He thought that it's okay to kill him.
or maybe he didn't know that the guy was going to die. I mean, he didn't
realize. Whatever it may be. Of course, we had that business before. When the end of the previous chapter, they were looking for how can you save a murderer, from the death penalty. Remember? So one of the questions that they asked was, was he a trefa or was he sholei, right? In other words, was he a person suffering from a disease which would have killed him anyway, or was he perfectly sound? And then the question, they asked, if you remember
that.
If let's say he had a cut over here, would that cut have proved fatal anyway, and all that he was doing is just to cut a little bit further or not? So, so they're trying to get out of it, you see. So in this case, the murderer comes and says, I didn't know that I wasn't allowed to kill him.
Or maybe he didn't have knowledge of this inherent defect that would have caused his death.
Yeah, whatever.
Minor blow.
We say, it's not, yeah.
Like hemophilia. I mean, he had no knowledge of it, so.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Minor injury.
It's a possibility.
Killed him.
Right. Rashi doesn't say very much over here. It says, Be'omer Mutov, you take a look on the top line over there, right? So it says, Sovor, this man is of the opinion, Shemutala Rogus Yisrael, that is permitted to kill a fellow Jew, the Zeu Mezit Shelo. But this is actually, he's doing it the Mezit. Just that he pleads ignorance that there was such a law. Okay. Omalei Abaye. So Abaye said to him, of course he said it to Rava, all right, or maybe to Rava. Depending, well, he said it to Rava, okay. So I say, was it Rava or was it Rabba? But at any rate, I think that probably the reason why it says Rava over here is because usually Abai and Rava are always fighting with each other. And they're always arguing points of halacha. So maybe the reading of Rava was correct over here. Hello? Come again? Well, with this, we're not talking over here about a goel hadam, though.
He didn't know.
We're not talking. We're talking about a person, who says, "I thought, I didn't know that there was a law that says that."
So what he's saying is, I didn't know that the Kohen Gadol had died.
Yeah.
Therefore, I thought I was within my rights to kill him.
Uh-huh. All right.
By falling on him.
By dropping a barrel on his head. I didn't know the Kohen Gadol.
But I don't accept
but
that.
But nevertheless,
the
basic principle is, they're not even
accidental.
Right.
It says accidental. If he's dropping a barrel on his head, he's doing it intentionally.
Of course, he doesn't.
So it doesn't apply.
No question, right.
Because this deals with accidental death.
Well, as I said, at this particular point, they don't give any examples. All that they say is simply that the man pleaded ignorance. Pleaded ignorance. He says, I didn't know that there was a din that says you're not allowed to kill. I thought it was okay to kill. Not another Jew.
He said, study the Ten Commandments.
Right.
I think my answer
is in that case, ignorance, we always say that ignorance is no excuse. Well, of course it's no excuse, but the point is...
They use the word murder, they use the word kill. Thou shalt not kill.
No, listen. We're quibbling in this particular case because obviously any case of homicide is a case of homicide. The question is only, was it intentional or was it accidental? You understand?
Could it not be? The scenario that I just suggested to explain his thing.
Yeah.
Isn't that plausible though? Someone could say, "I didn't know the Kohen Gadol."
Yeah, I could see. It's possible, right?
Do you know it? Is that
but you're talking about that they don't speak about it. They don't talk about it. So apparently it didn't occur to them that this was the reason. All right?
I don't see the connection.
No, there's no connection. He asked the question, and it was incomprehensible, so I tried to find a scenario where his question made sense.
That
he didn't know he was allowed to murder.
Right.
And if he is ordinarily allowed to murder if the guy has left the city of refuge, except... the guy's allowed to leave the city of refuge when the Kohen Gadol dies. He sees the guy who killed his brother walking along the street. He didn't know the Kohen Gadol had died and therefore gave the man the right to walk along the street. Therefore, he killed the man.
Right. Okay.
So I was just trying to...
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right.
It makes sense to me.
Are you a lawyer?
Onward, Christian soldier.
However, I have to tell you that there's another interpretation. Not about the example.
Not about
the example that you gave. Simply that Rabbeinu Chananel takes it in a slightly different way. Okay, let's take a look at Rabbeinu Chananel for a moment over there. You know, he goes to the, and then it says, Menohani Mili, so Omar Shmuel, right there, Makor, and so on, that we already had. Actually, I feel a lot there, I feel right. Then it says, Tom Rabbon and Bishko Go, right, and it says, Prat the Mason. All right?
Yeah,
in other words.
Okay, I think I've got
you
it.
You see it on the right side.
I've got it.
All right. He says that, what do we mean by, in error, if you wish, because, that's a plausible translation, Bishko Go. So it says, Prat, this excludes the Mason, Koloma, Eino Golan. In other words, he is not allowed to go into refuge. So, Ukmo Robo, the high Mason, so Robo interprets, what do we mean by this? This is a Mason, Eino Golan, who is not going to go into exile. The Omer Mutor, who says, because I thought it was permitted. She Omer Mutor, Korov the Mason, who, you understand? That if a person says, I thought that it was permissible to kill, then he is called a korov lemezid, which means almost in the same category as a person who killed premeditatively, right? And in his particular case, then it's for lo mechaper le begolus. His atonement cannot be secured through golus. In other words, he deserves a higher punishment at the hand of the Bnei Shalalem, and he cannot expiate his, the crime, his guilt that he performed, through going into Golas. In other words, the purpose of Golas is not just to save a life of the murderer who killed inadvertently, but it serves as a punishment until he can expiate his sin, you see. And this person has committed a sin which is almost the same as premeditated murder, and therefore he doesn't deserve this opportunity that he should have the kapora, the expiation, by means of going into the goddess.
What is
so, what is his punishment? The Rebbeinu Shalalem will take care of him personally.
Maybe that's why he said it, to get out of
Golas. Yeah.
He made a statement, he knew the law, he made a statement,
he
said,
we're
going to
Golas. Well, I
well,
don't know.
Punishment.
I don't
actually,
know. Because if they could prove that he was perfectly aware, then in that particular case it would be another story.
That would be his punishment.
Right.
But he would be put to death.
You see, okay. Obviously, if it was premeditated murder, there's no question, right? This we know, that the punishment should be death penalty, even with all the drain and everything else in order to prevent it. But still, theoretically, this should be his punishment, okay? But the score of the Mazid means that it was, to a certain extent, almost a premeditated murder. Okay? But you cannot convict him because of the fact that maybe there were no witnesses who gave him hasrar. Remember that we said before that a murderer who kills premeditatively, while the law is that he can be put to death, but what if there were no witnesses who gave him hasrar? Or maybe there was only one aid who gave him hasra, and there were not two aidim around, right? Then in that case, what do we say? He can't get Malkus, because Malkus would be like an expiation for him. They can't put him to death, because they don't have Alpi, Shnei Aidim or Shnei Aidim and so on, right? So in that particular case, the only thing they could do with him is like to put him into the kippah, which is, like a little small cell or something like that, and they keep him there until he will pager, something like that. Or the Rebbeinu Shalom will take care of him personally, you see, punish him. So that here too, he says that the Korol Mezid is not Eino Gola, but not because, he's innocent, but Eino Gola because of the fact that his crime that he has committed does not deserve the expiation that he would receive as a result of going into Golas. So this is how Rabbeinu Chananel takes it, and we'll see that he has good reason for it.
He is really the equivalent of a condemned murderer.
Yes, but you can't condemn him to death because
there's no way to do it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's the story over there. Okay?
Very, very, very sure.
Says I didn't know right. All right. Amalei Abaye Imei Muta, Onusu. So now Abaye objects. He says, look, if he says I didn't know, then in that case, Onusu, isn't he like a person, you know, who did it accidentally? So Amalei, so Abaye answered him and said to him, no. Nisht, he says, Shani Omer, says, look, it's different when Omer Mutar, Shani Omer, because I tell you right now that in my opinion, Omer Mutar, that if a person says, you know, that I thought it was permitted, so Karvel Meizit, right? So, and as we've already explained through Rabbeinu Chananel's interpretation, that means that he deserves a worse fate than going into Gomes. Okay, but the Rabbeinu Shalom has to take care of him first. Alright, then, you know, going back to how the Torah reads, it says, Bibli Das, without any knowledge. So, problem is coming. This, as we said, excludes somebody who had already the intention of murdering. Miskavim, Shita? So, is it an obvious Parkatolohu? After all, if a person purposely committed murder, he deserves to be put to death. So, Omar Rabbo, so Rabbo said, Protlam is Kavim, the Harogas Habehemov, the Harogas Odom. This is to exclude someone who had the intention of killing a beast, but instead he killed the human being. In other words, let's say he shot an arrow or something, let's say, at an animal, but it missed an animal and killed a person instead. Okay? Or Lukusi. He aimed at a goy. Well, Lukusi, of course, is not a goy, he's a half goy. Okay? He's a Samaritan, right? Bahargas Israel, and he killed a full fledged Israel. Now, of course, we have to understand. It doesn't mean that therefore you're permitted, you know, to shoot at the Kutsi either. Because, first of all, they keep a good part of the Torah. And secondly, any human being is a human being. The Rambam states specifically, I mean, that he's not allowed to kill anybody. A Jew or non-Jew doesn't make any difference. Obviously, you can't do it. I mean, I'm not talking about war, Chas v'Shalom, or you're trying to protect yourself. Somebody wants to murder you, then in that case the Gemara says, then you kill him first, you see, if you see that he's ready to kill you. Okay? But we're talking about, you know, in general, the world cannot exist. I mean, if we go around killing inadvertently because somebody is not a member of our own group.
True.
You know, in the Gemara we have various principles, like for example, Mipnei Tikkun Olam, right? Principle that in order to make this a better world, this is one of principle. Another principle would be Mipnei Shlom Habriyos. In other words, for the welfare of human beings in general, society in general, okay? So we have all these basic principles. This is why, for example, the Gemara in Gittin says that we have to give charity to the poor, even among the goyim, as well as we give to the Jew. If they suffer a loss, it's the right thing in order to go and you know to express your condolences to them and things like that and so on. Because we're mentioned, we're human beings, and we have to live like human beings with other people.
Sorry, sir.
Hello,
place
to
the goyim,
hey, yes, right. Thou shalt love you, right? Don't do anything to the other person that you wouldn't have done unto yourself, right? Yeah. Okay, so if a person killed inadvertently, that for example, he wanted to kill a beast and instead he killed a human being, or he wanted to kill a kusi and he killed a Yisrael, or Lenefel, he wanted to kill a fetus. Nafel is a fetus in this particular case.
Yeah.
Well, okay, yeah. All right, we can take it in that sense, though. It's all right, we can take it in that sense. Yeah, right, okay. Well, actually, there's something, you know, if you remember in the Torah, that if a man strikes a woman who is pregnant, and as a result she has a miscarriage, in that case he has to compensate.
So you're saying that if you hit a woman in her 9th month,
yeah,
then that would,
but
then
it is possible to take it in the sense in which you did, for the simple reason, because what is the opposite of it? It says, "V'horak ben kayoma," and he killed instead a child, you know, who's already what we would call a viable child.
Fully developed, yeah.
All right, so Ben Kayoma, the question is, what do you mean by Ben Kayoma? There are differences of opinion, but the usual interpretation of Ben Kayoma is that after 30 days of life, a child is a Ben Kayoma. This is the reason why, for example, you sit shiva for a child if he has passed his 30th day and he dies. But you don't sit shiva for, you know, let's say a stillborn child or anything like that, or an infant that dies, you know, in less than 30 days or something like that, because we say that he has not yet attained viability.
So then, non-viable would be maybe a child who was just born and not.
It hasn't lived 30 days yet. So this is the way I would understand it. Okay. Of course, I mean maybe David has a different interpretation.
Right.
Yes. But the reason why I translated also was the fetus is because in the book of Job, that's exactly how Job, this is the word that he uses, right? Yes, he says, "Oh, kneifel tamun." Yeah, so, "Oh, would that I was like a fetus hidden in the womb of my mother, if only I could have been." And from this we have the word also mapil,
right.
In the sense, you know, to miscarriage.
That's what the right. Yiddish word
to
uses.
Abort, to mapple, have mapple, a miscarriage, mapple, right? Yeah. Mapple, right. Yeah. And so, therefore, in modern Hebrew, the word hapala means an abortion.
Not legal in Israel, right?
I hate to tell you it is. You know why? Because they're run by a bunch of leftists over there. And the leftists believe that, you know, they don't believe in having too many children. They've encouraged people who have families, you know, to abort. Yeah.
If here, it's not called.
Yeah, but they're
saying you're allowed to. I mean, it's not you're allowed to, but it's not really a capital offense.
All right, it's not a capital offense if you had no intention of killing the person whom you killed.
But
so,
I mean, if you're killing a newborn baby, apparently, if you thought it was a non-violent.
Yeah,
baby,
I see what you're driving at. Right, I understand. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but that's no justification, for abortion.
We've got right in front of us on the page. It's
because I said the word itself could imply not necessarily what we call an abortion, but what the doctors sometimes call an abortion, namely like a miscarriage.
But this is also supposed to be an accident, not necessarily
right, of course, obviously. No, no, no. Obviously it's not intentional.
That's what it says. It's supposed to be an accident.
But no, the accident, he usually killed someone who was a mature baby.
Yeah, but
he was going to kill the non-viable infant. Isn't that what it says?
Yeah,
he intended to kill.
He intended to kill a non-viable one, but he killed
But if he intended to kill a non-viable one, that was not a capital offense, then why should an abortion be such a terrible thing?
That's a good point. I think you're right on point with that.
But, I mean, I don't want to get involved with abortion.
But, you know, just to be fair, in Israel, it's restricted to things that are going to damage the physical or mental health of the mother. It isn't like abortion on demand in this country.
Yeah, but that has become abortion on demand over there. Has become that. That's the problem.
They have, you know,
we're not talking about, you know, abortion, which is according to halacha, where the life of the mother is endangered, okay? Right. Well, we're talking about abortion on demand, which the leftists in Israel have been promoting all along, and the social workers have been promoting all along. God knows how many hundreds of thousands of abortions have taken place, where if these children have been permitted to live, the population of Israel would be quite different, and the Arabs would have a real competition, you know, in the birth rate. One of the terrible things that has happened on having a Jewish state without a Jewish conscience.
I thought it was more restricted than that. It was really, as you say, to save the life of the mother.
Yeah, that's according to Allah. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about upon the man. So that they encourage women. They don't want us. The ideal of the leftists is to have one or two children, to have a couple of dogs, big apartment, money, that they can go on vacations and stuff like that. They don't understand that the Orthodox people love children and they'll work, they'll sacrifice everything in order to raise their children and so on and so forth. They don't understand that.
I just didn't know what's
the different
why.
Sense of
I mean,
values altogether. They have a different sense of values. And that's why they're giving away Eretz Israel to Arafat and company. because they have their own set of values, unfortunately. All right, let's do a little bit more and then we'll call it a night. My voice is not going to hold out too much longer. But yeah, as you can see, there's some very interesting material over here.
That's a good point.
Yeah, really, it gives us a lot of reason to think.
Permitting abortion.
All right. Another Baraisa that they quote says, in Befesa, what is the meaning of suddenly? So he says, Prot, in other words, this excludes Lekeren Zovis. Somebody suddenly came around the corner with carrying something and he bumped into you and he hit you and he killed you. You understand? So in that case, this is definitely unpremeditated and something that could not have been foreseen because he couldn't see. It was a blind corner, okay? Below Abel, without any hatred, so obviously proplasone means that, you know, somebody who hates is obviously guilty of premeditated murder. Hadofo, what does it mean? He pushed him. So he says, right, which means that he pushed him with his body, and as a result, you know, he pushed him and he caused death. Oh, Hishlichalov, or, you know, he threw on him, you know, something, right? So the Hovi, this includes Yerida, Shehid Tzarech Aliyah. This is a new principle, and what he says is that it includes a downward motion, which is really a preliminary or is necessary in order to have an upward motion. In other words, let's say first he went down and then he went up. So if he hit him in the down position, then in that particular case, he would be liable to go into Golas. Because what do we say? The downer is a downer, okay? The downer goes to Golas,
yeah.
Right? Even though the intention was to go up, mm-hmm. but you know, it was a preliminary, you see.
This, there
so, this is
Yerida,
the Tzarech Aliyah. I was once
for
in
example,
a.
Sorry, David asked. For example, a person bending over to lift up something.
Alright.
Okay. So, isn't that good enough?
Well,
then what happens? I mean, somebody pushes him, or. I don't follow. This is
hishlichalov. No, hishlichalov is a different thing. That's throwing something.
Or supposing you're pushing a spring down because you want the force of the spring to bang up. So you're pushing the spring down. In order to make the thing go up. How's that? When you're pushing a jet handle down there, you're pushing a jet handle down in order to make the thing go up. But because your hand is pushing down on the jack handle, it's a downward motion.
All right, let's take a look at how Rashi defines it.
Falls on him.
Let us see how Rashi defines
it. Point,
okay.
Good point.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to go outside in the driveway or demonstrate?
All right. First of all, we'll stop at the third line over there.
Where are we? I'm sorry.
Okay. The Fessa, right? Says, what do you mean
Rashi?
By suddenly? Says, Protus excludes the Karen Zogis, right? Somebody comes around the corner.
Yeah.
Shalashon Pesa, Ubisamach. Because Pesa means that it happened suddenly. Given Tari Minun Betecha. Because the Aramaic for suddenly is taken, right? Immediately it happened. So it says, Prot the Karen Zovis, this excludes Karen Zovis coming around the corner. This guy comes out of one alley, right? Benichdas Lazer, and he enters another alley, right? In other words, it goes around the corner. Lift nose for Yomin in a small to go either to the right or to the left. The Sakino Biyodo, and he has a knife in his hand. The Zebo Kenegdo, and the other guy comes opposite him. The Karen Zovis around the corner below Ra'o, and he didn't see him. The Harogo, and he killed him that way. In other words, his knife hit the guy whom he couldn't see. So in that case, we said he goes, he would go into Golas. All right, Shedechofo Begupo. It says he pushed him with his body, right? Below his kavein, without any intention, to kill him. He had no intention. Just, whatever it was, he pushed him. Now, finally it says, Lehovi Yerido, right? This includes Yerido, mm-hmm. which is the Tzarech Aliyah, right? So it says, Kegon, example, he says, Rotze Lehorim Yodo Bechach. Man wants to raise his hand violently, forcefully, right? The Garzim Biyodo, and he has an axe in his hand.
Right.
Mashpil Tchilo, And so he lowers it first. Now, Mashpil Tchila is Kufa, right? And he lowers his body first. The Shochel Eponov, and he bends over, Kedei Lohorim Bechoach, in order to be able to raise it forcefully. Okay?
To build that momentum.
Yeah, right. To get that momentum, okay,
the
very good. Correct?
All right?
So, in this particular case, the Hashpola saw Harag. And then when he lowered his hand, he happened to kill. So, the law is same, or you shouldn't say, Hoil Vitzorach Aliyahu, inasmuch as this is, you know, to go up, Potter Begolis, then he should be free from going into exile, the Hoksir Vayapel, because after all it says Vayapel, which we said is there the filo, right, the way it goes down. So that, therefore, this too is included. Well, I think we'll call a halt at this particular point,
okay.
And we'll continue. Now, our next session, of course, will be the day after Simchas Torah.
Right.
Okay, because as I explained to you, next Wednesday is a fast day.
Right.
By the time we get finished with the davening, we'll all be hungry and tired and everything else, okay? And, of course, the following Wednesday is Yom Kippur, and then the following Wednesday is Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and I'll be away at that time. So we'll skip, but the day after Simchas Torah we'll get together again, and we'll be meeting regularly at 7:30. Okay? 7:30. I think 7:30 is a good time for us.
Good.
Davening at that time happens to be that week about 5 minutes to 6. So it still gives us plenty of time to get home after the davening to have a bite to eat and so on, so on, and then we can come back. Whatever. Okay.
Alright.
So these were things that we discussed last week. And we had the case where they discuss another problem. That's the problem of what we would call Yerida Letzorach Aliyah or Aliyah Letzorach Yerida. Okay? Aliyah means going up, right? But it's a preliminary to going down. For example, if I would raise my hand in order to do this, you see? So, while it's Aliyah, but at the same time, it's like this. On the other hand, what if I start out like this in order to go like that? So, in that case, this would be a Yerida Letzorach Aliyah. Okay? And again, the din is that if it is Aliyah Nitzarech Yerida, then the Aliyah, since that came first, in other words, the going up, so therefore that would be considered Shogeg. On the other hand, if it is Yerida Nitzarech Aliyah, even though eventually you'll have to go up, but nevertheless, the Yerida is the predominant element in this case, and that's, as we said before, it's parallel to the idea that going down, falling, and so on, by Yapel Alav. And so therefore, in that case, he is a shogeg, and he would have to go into Golis. So we had, for example, a problem with a person going up a ladder, and the rung breaks underneath him, and he falls, okay? And he falls upon somebody else, and obviously, you know, he kills him. Now, if he's going down the ladder, and he slipped, and so on, in that particular case, that's clearly a case of Golis. What if he was going up the ladder? Then theoretically he should be excused, right? But what if the rung of the ladder happened to be worm-eaten, as they say, his liya, that they, you know, he didn't take care, or that the sockets in which the rung of the ladder, you know, were loose, not holding it? Then in that particular case, this is already a korum lemezid, because he should have taken better care of his ladder, and that way, you know, the accident would never have happened. So therefore, he is in the categories we said of current limits.
What if it's somebody else's ladder? It's not his ladder.
He should still check it.
Right. Did you go up a ladder without checking to make sure it was firm? Okay. So now we continue with the new Mishnah on the bottom of the Zion on the days. Okay. Nishmat habazel lekato. Okay. Let's assume now that in this particular case, you have an axe, right? And the iron part, in other words, what we would call, let's say, the head of the axe, it slips from the holder.
Comes out of the socket.
Yeah, right. Comes out of the socket. Slips from it. Okay? The horror. And in slipping, it kills somebody. Okay? You know, just started flying and then it killed somebody. So, Rabbi Omer Enogolem. Rabbi says that he does not go into Golis. In other words, Rabbi considers this as being, apparently, as a case, you know, of shogeg or oinus, if you wish. In other words, he could not have anticipated that. Okay? The chachamim ayimim goylem. But the chachamim say that he does go into golus. In other words, it's an accident, but he should have been more careful. And of course, it slipped, it fell, and so that in that particular case, then his punishment would be to go into golus. Minho eitz hamispakeya. Now, what if it happened during the time that he was chopping away at a tree, okay, and wood split off from the tree? And, you know, it killed the person that was standing nearby over there. So in this particular case, Rabbi Yomer Golan, and Rabbi says in this case he does go into Golas, and the Chachamim ain't no Golan. The Chachamim say that he doesn't. Okay? So, this is how Rashi understands, you know, there's very little comment that Rashi makes over here. He simply says, Minu Eisam is Pakeya, Yotzer Kesam, he says, literally a splinter, but of course, obviously, it wasn't a splinter, it was something a little bit more substantial. Then Nitaz, and then, you know, it was cast, you know, Lemerachok, for a distance, it moved for a distance, and the Horak, killed. Okay. Now, Rabbeinu Chananel has his own interpretation over there. Okay? That's at the bottom of the page. Third line from the bottom near the end over there. Okay? It says, Nishmat HaBasel Mekata. You see that over there?
Yeah.
It says, Kodem Sheyakel Hoveis Levako. In other words, prior to the fact that he was, before he even got ready to strike the tree that he wanted to cut, the handle flew off, right? I mean, the head of the iron head flew off. So the horak and he killed. So Rabbi Omer Eino Gola. So Rabbi says, right? Rabbi says that he does not go into Golas, but not for the reason that it would seem from before, namely that he was a shoygek, namely that this was accidental and, you know, couldn't be helped. But rather he says the high kor of lemezid. That's what I said a few moments ago, that we have that third category where he should have been much more careful with what he was doing. And in that particular case, you know, he is not given the privilege of going into Golas, because, as I said, first of all, this way in Golas, he has the protection in the Yerim Niklot, and secondly, also he has the idea of Kapora, and this person doesn't deserve the Kapora. Okay? And as Rabbi Nechanel continues, and he says, who's the Korv Lemezid, who she'ilu lo hoya rafui lo yonishma, he says, because if it were not weak, you know, the iron, it wasn't firm, in other words, it wasn't firmly in the handle, it would never have gone flying away. It would have flown away. Okay? All right, so, getting back to the text of the Gemara right now, Tanya. We have a Baraisa where it says, Omalahim Rabbi Lachachamim. Rabbi said to the sages, says, Bechine Mar, tell me, does the Pasuk say, Venoshal Abazel May Eitzo, that, you know, the iron head slips from its wood, meaning, you know, from its wooden holder? Alolone Marlon Moetz doesn't say simply from the wood or from the tree. The Od Neemar Eitz the Mato, the Neemar Eitz the Malam. Furthermore, he says, you know, the word eitz is repeated twice. First of all, you have nichros ha'eitz. In other words, you go into the woods to do what? To cut down the tree. And then it says, v'noshal abazel, no eitz, right? So, why do we have then twice the word eitz written over there? So he says, ma eitz ha'omu l'malo min ha'eitz ha'mispakeya. So just as the word eitz in reference before, so he's going nichros ha'eitz, right? It's going to cut down the tree. So in that case, what are we talking about? We're talking about Minho Eitz HaMispakeya. In other words, the tree that's going to be chopped.
Yeah.
Right? So, Af Eitz HaMilamata. So therefore, the word Eitz, which occurs afterwards, you know, V'nosha Abasa Minho Eitz, that also is Minho Eitz HaMispakeya. So for that, the way the Torah said specifically, you know, that Hu Yonus Halachasa Moela B'choy, right, that he can flee to one of the cities of refuge and, you know, and be kept alive, So that therefore it applies, according to Rebbe, only if it slipped not from the head, you know, before he was ready to cut the tree, but rather only during the action of cutting the wood, the chopping at the wood, that either if, let's say, a splinter, as we learned in the Mishnah, of course the splinter is a little understating it, but you know what I mean.
A chip,
that's better, all right? Either a chip, you know, got, or the, you know, he hit it with such force that the head of the hatchet, you know, flew off. So this is his reasoning, okay? Omar Rabbi Chiya Barashi said, Omar Rav, in the name of Rav, he says, Ushneihem Mikra Echadoshu. It says that both of them, in other words, both Rabbi and the Chachomim, were teaching exactly the same pasuk. V'noshal ha-barzel min ha-eitz, namely, how do you touch the word v'noshal? Now, of course, normally we take it in what sense? V'noshal means that it fell, it slipped out, okay? V'noshal ha-barzel. It slipped, the iron slipped from the wood. And, of course, the way we took it to begin with was from the handle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Rabbi is of the opinion that yesh eim la masores and v'nishal ksiv. Alright, so we see that the difference is based upon how they interpret this word, v'noshal. Okay? Now,
that also means it fell, doesn't it?
V'noshal implies with much greater force. There is, in several other places in the Gemara, a machlokes as to whether it comes when it's a question of interpretation, as we would say drash, you know. Mm-hmm. In other words, you want to derive a halacha from a pasuk, whether it is yesh eim lamasoris or yesh eim lamikra. Yesh eim lamasoris means that we give preference to the written text, what we call the traditional text or the Masoretic text. You've heard of the expression Masoretic text. This is the way, in other words, we find it written. Of course, you know that there are words in the Torah that may be written one way, but at the same time, maybe you read it in a different way. And the way we read it, the traditional reading, this is what we call Yeshem La Mikra. We give preference to the Mikra, to the reading version. All right? So, Gemara, for example, in Sanhedrin, right near the beginning, goes into a great discussion of various cases where there is a difference of opinion. Here it's only alluded to in our text. But I'll give you an example from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, okay? They talk over there, for example, about Lo Savashil Yedi Bachalev Imo, okay? Well, look, why don't we take a look at it, because there's some very good examples over there. It will be right at the very beginning of something, and that's dollar. Okay. We have an example for, let's say, about Sukkos. Okay? There's a difference of opinion, right? That do we give preference, let's say, to the Masoros, in other words, to the way it is written, in which case the word Sukkos is written without a Vav, and the second time, and the third time around it's written with a Vav. Okay? Whereas, if you simply, you know, give preference to the way that actually is read, so in all three cases, how do we read it? We read it as basukos, 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 right? Okay. So what is the practical difference? Practical difference is as to how many walls does a sukkah require in order to be a kosher sukkah, and also how do we derive this from the text itself of the Torah? Because the Torah nowhere says how many walls there has to be in the sukkah, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Nor does it mention, the height of the walls and things like that, you know.
these things are not mentioned in the Torah. For this, of course, we have oral traditions, you know, that tell us exactly, you know, what a sukkah is and what would be a minimum, what would be, you know, going beyond. For example, if a sukkah, you know, is more than, let's say, 30 feet high, for example, so according to the major opinion, you know, Chachamim and so on, so this would invalidate the sukkah. That's already too much of a mansion rather than a sukkah, you see. Not aware that you're in a sukkah if the roof is so high, like that, for example. So, Rab Shimon said, all right, the Rabbanan say Yeshem Lemasoris, the way it's written, right? Rab Shimon Sova Yeshem Lemikra. So in this particular case, for example, Rabbanan Sova Yeshem Lemasoris, so when they see Basukos, Basukos, you know, Basukas, Basukas, Basukos, Arekat Arba. In other words, singular, that's the way they understand it, and then plural, right? So 1 + 1 + 2, that means 4. Dal Chad Kro Legufe, one of them has to be deducted, because of the fact that one of them tells us that we have to sit in a sukkah. So what does that leave us? Poshul hutlos, right? So now how many walls remain?
Three.
All right. So asai hilchasor. So for this we have a halacha l'moshe m'sinai. In other words, there's an oral tradition going back to Moshe on Mount Sinai to say that girat ha'lishlishis, that it reduces the third wall, v'ukim to atefach, that the third wall, if it's only a tefach high, can already be considered a wall of the sukkah. So in other words, you would need only two decent walls,
awesome,
plus a wall which is at least a tefach high, and that's it. Okay? So that's according to Chachamim. On the other hand, Rab Shimon, in this particular case, who holds that Yesh'eim LaMikra, so what does he do? So he, you know, he says basukas, 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 the way you have to read it. Sorry, count sheish, right, there are six. Dal chad kro legufe, so take off one of these psukim. All right, one of the psukim. This was the one that already he reads as basukos, right? So what does that leave? It leaves us four, correct? Boshelahu arba, right? So asa hilchaso gratul avias, we're kinta tepach. Okay, guns fine. So this is the case of Rab Shimon. And as I say, there are others too that they bring up there. For example, question about how long should a woman after giving birth be considered, you know, be made in Nasa? If you remember, you know, it's the beginning of Parshat Hazriah, okay? That, Ekrani, they said to Rav Yehuda Ben Royce, they said to him, tell me, shall I read it Shivim, that a woman who has given birth should remain 70 days in the state of impurity, right? So Yochel Tehei Yoledes Nekeva Temeo Shivim. Shall I say, you know, that of course, what does the Torah say over there? It reads Shivuayim, which means 2 weeks. So you can see that if you read it as Shivim instead of Shivuayim, it takes a long difference, right? As to how long the separation between husband and wife has to take place.
Well, that means like 3 months.
Right.
Whether it's a male or a female?
Huh?
Doesn't it depend on whether it's...
No, of course it does, absolutely. Because in the case of, you know,
a male,
in the case of a male, it says specifically Shivas Yomim. That you can't read it any other way, okay? No. But the other one, when you have Shin Bet Ayin Yud Mem, so that you could read either in Shivim or you could read Shivayim, either one.
Right.
And there are cases in Sonatim where the word Shivayim is the correct reading. Yom Echod or Yomayim, right, or Shiva, and so on and so forth. And so on. So, okay. But this is a little example, you know, that I brought from the Gemara, and there are others too, as for example, in, you know, Bohor Tanya. Okay. Another problem. The one that I started to tell you about. We know the Pasuk we read is Los Vashel Gedi Bachalev Imo, right? That you shall not see the cook, I mean, right? Cook a goat in its mother's milk. But you know, the same word, bachalev, beis, right? Ches, lamed, beis, can be read as how? Chalev. Can be read as chalev. Okay? So the question is, should I read it as bachalev? No, you cannot see the, you cannot cook the goat in the fat of its mother? instead of in the milk of its mother, now she throws out the whole business about basavar and the cholov, you know, if we accept this particular thing. So the answer is they get around it by saying, look, how can you cook in the chalev? Chalev is not the kind of a substance in which you can cook. You need a liquid substance, and the only liquid substance that you have is bachalev. But the point is, if you accept yesh eim la mikra, right, the way it is read, then there's no kasha. Okay, but if you say yesh eim al esoras, then you say, no. So maybe I could interpret it, you see, as the word of chalev. So that this is where the problem comes in over here. You know, what do I do in this particular case? All right?
Nishal.
Right. Is it noshal or is it nishal? So, what would be the practical difference? So they say, Omer Rav, Shnei Mikra Chadoshu, right? Ben noshal abazim in the way, so Rabbi Sova Yeshem Lamasoris, ben nishal ksiv. In other words, he reads it not as noshal, which would be intransitive, but rather, but nishal, which we could take as an active PL form. You understand? And in that case, you know, it means that, you know, it caused something to break off. As we said before, minoetzam is pakeh, right? This is the way he interprets it. Rabbanan sabre, yeshem la mikro, right? They say, oh, look, it's written, v'noshal kerinin, that's what we read. So, now that they've brought in this principle, so now they say, v'rabi, yeshem la mesoris, really? Tell me, does Rabbi really believe that yeshem la mesoris instead of yeshem la mikro? V'hom, Rabbi Yitzchok by Yosef. Didn't Rabbi Yitzchok bar Yosef say, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan? This is a continuation, by the way, of that blot in the Gemara that I read from the Sanhedrin. That Rabbi Yehuda ben Roeit, Sebe Shammai, the Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Akiva, Kula Sevirahu Yeshim Lamikra. In all the controversies that are brought over there in the Gemara and Sanhedrin about whether it's Yeshim Lamikra, Yeshim Lamasora, so in reality they all believe that Yeshim Lamikra. So Hainu de Ka'amar Lahu Ba'ol. So if that's the case, then if he does not understand the word Benoshal to be taken as the word Benishal, then what? So the answer is, well, that's why he gave a second argument. He says, and furthermore, he says, I have a Gezeri Shava, namely the word Eitz. Why is the word Eitz repeated twice? Lichrois of Eitz, and then Benoshal, you know, so just as, and the Lichrois of Eitz means in order to cut it. So that therefore the Noshal Abaz also means from the actual cutting itself is when it happens. Okay. So Omar Rapofa, Man the Shora Pisal Adiklo, says, how about the following case? Guy takes a clod of earth, okay? Clod of earth, a clump of earth, whatever you want to call it, and he throws it Ladikla, he throws it on a date palm. Now you know date palms, they grow quite tall, right? Naturally, he wants to get some dates down. All right, so he throws this clump up on the date palm, right? The asar tamre, and then what happens? It says the dates, he causes the dates to drop. Rashi understands the word asar in the sense of a hishir, which means he makes a drop. All right, and he causes the dates to drop. The asar tamre, and so the dates go, the kotel, and they kill somebody. Right? So now what? So he says, Bonu l'machlokes to Rabbi Rabbanan. He says, you know that? This would be typical of the same argument that we had just before, the difference of opinion between Rabbi and Rabbanan, you know, concerning the business about the iron that fell out, or is it only in the splitting that it happened? Okay? Pshito, he says, okay, clear, all right, you know, obviously. So he says, maybe it's not so obvious. Badu the same or kechorach kochodomich. Maybe we should say that in the second case, the business about the causing the drapes to drop and they killed. Maybe this is a case of where the strength or the force is transmitted into another force, which eventually does it. In other words, it's not a direct action that caused it, but maybe it's only as an indirect action. And if it is a direct action, then in that particular case, we would say he should go into Golas, right? But what if it's an indirect action? Then in that case, we would say that the man would be potter, because this would be a case of onus. Okay? Right. It would be a case of an accident. It's the way it happened, that's all. So, kamash polon. Pardon me. So, therefore, we learn that accordingly, actually, you should go into Golis if such a thing happens. So, since Rabbi, says that he goes into Golis if he did that, so where do we have a case of an indirect action taking place? He says, well, okay, Kigon de Shalap Piso, Umachi le Garmo, Vyazo Garme, Umachi le Kabasa. A lot of nice words that we have over here. All right. So the answer is, right, he takes a clog of earth, right, which was the Koyach Rishon, right, and then it hit the branches of the date palm, okay, and it gave them a treson. In other words, it didn't hit the dates directly, so that they dropped, but all that it did was to hit the branches, okay, and then as the branches were shaking, so then they dropped. So in that case, we already have immediate action is what? Just hitting the branch. Indirect action is it going down, as that the dates fall. The Yozel Gomri says Makir Lechabasa, right, and then the Asatame, and then the dates fell as a result. The Yozel Tame Kotel. So in the second case, then according to Rebbe, then he would not have to go into Golis. But if it was directly, that he hit the dates and the dates fell and killed something, the cluster of dates that came and killed somebody, then in that particular case, that was a direct action, and that would be no different, according to Rebbe, than the instance of the, he hits the tree, and he hit it with such force, that the head of the axe slipped and then killed somebody. Okay.
But his reason for throwing the clod of earth, his intent, was to cobble the consequences.
Yeah, there's no question, of course, that was his intent.
So determinative that he only hit the branch.
Yeah. Because, as I say, they're trying to figure a case, where it was not a result of a direct action, but only the indirect result, okay?
Right.
This is according to Rebbe. According to
Chacham. Right,
no, you mean if the branch fell and killed a person? Yeah, well, in that case, that would be a direct action. That wouldn't be an indirect action. It would be no different than hitting the dates and causing them to fall. Yeah, but there are cases. In law, I'm sure that David can affirm that if it is not a direct action, then in that particular case, the law would deal either more lenient or they would free a person. Yes. Yeah, well, it's high anyway, it's no question. I don't know that, let's say it's five stories high, it's not that high. But, let's say a date palm, the dates begin growing roughly about, let's say, where the ceiling is over here. So, if you have a nice tall ladder, you can actually climb up over there in order to do it, you see. In that case, it'd be a different problem. But here, he didn't want to go, he didn't have a ladder, he didn't want to go climbing up. So as a result, he simply threw something that he figured, with its logic. Yeah. All right.
Are they citing all these cases, the case that they cite here, from actual experience, or is this just...
Oh, yeah. This, I would say definitely this is an actual experience. The business with the date palm, this is an obvious way that, people living in an area like, for example, in Babel, or even in Eretz Yisrael, there are places where palm trees grow, in great abundance, so all you have to do is to go and travel, particularly in the warmer parts of Eretz Yisrael, where they grow them, and you see them growing. Very peculiar looking trees, by the way, the date palms. Well, of course, you have all different types of
ponds.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. But not all of them apparently bear fruit. I mean, very often they're more ornamental than they are fruit-bearing. But when you see them, you know, you see the clusters very often, and it's like they tie bags underneath them. I don't know. Do you ever see it?
They catch the dates.
They also tie bags around the bananas, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Brown bags.
Right. And it may also have to do something with the ripening, also.
No, it has to do with the birds. The bird should eat the right fruit.
Right. Okay. That's very good. That's why we haven't had any luck with our grapevine. In the spring, I see all kinds of little clusters, but by the time the
birds get
the harvest them. Comes, yes, the birds have eaten it, or the squirrels, yeah, or somebody. Yeah.
Here at the gun, southern end of the Canary.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Shape.
Right. Absolutely. I say in the warmer areas, you find a lot of it. Right. Okay, Mishnah now continues. Says Azorik Evnu Shus Harabim. Okay, here is a guy, and he throws a stone into the street. Shus Harabim, where people are going all the time, the Horak, and he killed.
It's a Russia.
Harez Agoyla. He goes into Golas. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Eimer. He says im. If, he says, what would happen if he throws a stone and then the other guy suddenly sticks his head out the Kibla and he catches that stone in his head, okay? In other words, at the time when this guy threw the stone, there was nobody there. But between the time that he threw the stone and hit somebody and killed him, that person had inadvertently, let's say, stuck his head out, and as a result he received the stone. So in that case, Areze Potter, then the guy doesn't have to, the one who threw the stone does not have to go into Golas. Zorakes of Evan Lachatzero, what if he was throwing a stone into his own courtyard? The Horag, and he killed a person in his own property. So im yesh reshus l'nizak l'kones l'shem goyle. If the person who was killed, in this case it says literally the one who was injured, all right, if the person who was injured and died as a result of the injury had the right to enter this particular premise, then in that case the guy who threw the stone has to go into Golas. We im lav, but if not, if the guy who was hit had no right to trespass on the property of the person who threw the stone, then ain't no Golas, then he doesn't go into Golas. Shneemar, and they derive this from an interpretation of the pasuk. Pasuk says, "Ba'asher yovo es bayehu bayad." This is still in connection with the same incident, okay, where a person goes together with another person into the forest. So, ma haya rishus l'nizak l'mazik l'kones l'sham, just as the forest is an area where both the injured party and the person who injured, right, have the right to be there, because in other words, everybody has the right to go into the forest in order to cut trees, okay? So, in that particular case, then af kol rishus l'nizak l'mazik l'kones l'sham, right? So the same would apply to any area where both parties have the right to be present. Yotza chotzar balabayas, so this excludes the yard of the person, who owns the yard, who of course was the one who threw the stone to begin with, she'ein vishus l'nizok dekoneh shom, where the person who was hurt had no right to enter therein. Okay? He was a trespasser. Abba Shaul Omer. Now Abba Shaul comes along with another interpretation of the same pasuk, about the chopping the tree. He says, I have something else to tell you. It says, Ma chatova seitzim mishus, just as to cut trees, this is a voluntary action, right? So ap kol rishus. So likewise, in any other case, you know, where it is purely a voluntary action. So yotzo ov hamakis benoi. It says this would exclude from the punishment of having to go into Golus of people who had a legitimate right to hit somebody. Who are they? A father has the right to hit his son. Okay. A Rebbe has the right to hit his Talmud.
Not anymore.
The old timers did, too.
And the Shliach Bezdin, he is the one who is delegated by the Bezdin to administer the Makkos. And let's say, in other words, if he gave the Makkos, and that person died as a result of it, so the person who administered is not guilty. It's not guilty. Okay? It's not liable at this point. Because he was acting, he was performing a mitzvah. The mitzvah being, you know, that the Bezdin has the right to chastise a person in order to uphold the law. Okay? Make sure that people will obey. All right. Rashi only comments on Ha'ov Hamakes Benoi. He says, La Toise Laderach Acheres, right? In order to change the behavior of his son. He's permitted to hit his son. Mishliach Bezdin, he says, Hamalka Aboyim Lechayiv Malkas. Okay? Lechayiv Malkas, the person who deserves Malkas. All right, so now they're going to begin to analyze what we learned in the Mishnah. First of all, the Rishus HaRabim. What business does this guy have throwing a stone in the public domain? Right? It's a logical question. If he throws a stone, he says, Mezidhu, then he's a person who is... he's premeditating in whatever his action is. So, Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchok, he says... Now, we're talking specifically about a case which is not, I mean, obviously, you're not allowed to go and to throw stones in the Rishus HaRabim. Not allowed to. But here we're talking, it says, about a different case. We're talking about a case of a person who is knocking down his wall. Obviously, he has a wall, let's say, which is made of stone. Okay? And the stones are already loose or something, or the wall is crumbling, whatever it is. And so he decides, you know, he wants to take down the wall and replace it, of course, eventually, you know, with a better wall, right? So he's knocking down his wall, all right? So knocking down the wall, what happened? He took one of the stones, let's say, and he happened to throw it, let's say, into the Rishus HaRabim, right? So the Gemara asked the following question, hey, what do you mean, throw? He says, he should look more carefully as to where he's throwing his stones, okay? So they say, well, the Seisel is Kosla Balayla, right? We're talking about a guy who's taking down his stone at night. At night he can't see who's in the Rishus HaRabim.
What's he doing throwing
stones? So they say, Balayla, at night? He should also look carefully. What kind of business is
this? A torch.
So they propose another knocking down the wall. The Seisel is Kosla La'ashpa. This is a guy who's knocking down his wall and putting it into a garbage dump. Okay? So they say, Hi Ashpa Hechidami, what kind of a garbage dump are you talking about? If there are a lot of people present over there in the public dump, right, then in that case, Peshehu, he's being negligent. And that means already if he's a Peshehu that he's Korov Labesis, right? So he doesn't deserve Golus, but instead he deserves a worse punishment, but you know, obviously he can't be put to death. So they say, that's if there are a lot of people over there, then he's a Peshea. If people are rarely there, right? You don't find too many people over there, then in that case, onushu. Then in that case, he is, it's an accident that it happened, and therefore he should be put to because he's an onus, right? So Rav Papa says, I'll tell you, the kind of ashpor that is concerned over here is a special kind of an ashpor. He says, "Leitzricha, what do we need it? Ela la'ashpa asur liponeis bo balayla." We're talking about a dump area where people are accustomed to taking a dump at night. Play on words, no?
Dump at night.
V'hein asu yolipanis boi bayom. But during the daytime, they don't come in order to do their business over there. Okay?
You mean it's used as a latrine?
Yeah, they use it as a latrine, exactly.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Remember, they didn't have indoor plumbing in those days, so they had to go outdoors.
Translation of Sharashba.
Yeah. They call it the dung, right? The dung gate, right? Yeah. Absolutely right.
Otherwise, this was Bondi's Island, isn't it?
Yeah, Bondi's Island, right? But you know, the Shar Ashba, that's right next to the Kotel HaMaravi. That's the gate to which you go in order to.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. But obviously, this is the gate, right, where they would remove, let's say, the. This was the sanitary.
Sanitation department,
right? Okay. All right, so in this particular place, people go at night. Why? Because at night, obviously, they're not going to be seen. So, you know, they have a certain amount of privacy over there. The inn is usually punished by bayom, but, you know, during the daytime, people don't go and do their business publicly over there. Okay? They ikar the mikre, but nevertheless, there are times when it happens that the yasir, right? And, you know, somebody does come and he sits down over there in order to do what he has to do. All right, so they say, Peshaya loyhave, he's not negligent, Dehoa ina asuli ponispo bayom, because it's not the kind of a place, you know, where people normally come in order, you know, to use the facilities during the day. Einus nami loyhave, it's also not einus, why? Dehoa iko de mikre yaser, because there are times, however, when people do happen to come and use it. Once in a while, people use it, okay? All right, do down towards the bottom of the page. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Emer, all right, he says, all right, going back to the Mishnah, if you remember, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov said that in other words, if after he'd already begun throwing the stone, then somebody suddenly came along and stuck his head out and, got hit, okay? So, Tana Rabbanan, sages learned that Umotza, you know, again, the same pasuk, you know, comes from this area in the Torah that we're talking about, that it says over there, Umotza's Reyehu Vames, right? In other words, it hit the other guy and that other guy died as a result, right? So, umatzo, he says, prat lamamsi is atzmo. In other words, umatzo means it hit, but not in the case of a person who causes himself to be hit. In other words, who was not careful enough to look out to see what was going on and to take care of himself. So, mekano Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. So, from this, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov said, im ishiyotzo ho'evin miyodei, haitzi halo esroishay, if, following the fact that he began to throw the stone, you know, it started and it already had left his head, and the other guy stuck out his head, the keyboard and potter. Then in that case, you know, the thrower is potter. So the main one, are we to say that the matzah miyakora mashma, that matzah means right to begin with, that the circumstance would have to be there that, you know, it is going to hit. Raminhu, so to this we have another matzah in the Torah.
Right.
That is in connection with the law that we find in Sefer Vayikra. Sefer Vayikra, towards the end over there, in Parsha Bahar, we speak over there about what happens if a guy becomes poor. Okay? So in that particular case, what does he have to do? So he would have to sell, let's say, his property, okay, in order to be able to live. Now, what do we find in Parsha Bahar? We find that if he has to sell his property, then when the Shnas HaYovel, you know, the year of Jubilee comes along, then in that particular case, you know, the property will have to revert back again to the original owner, right? Now, there also it says, you know, that they use the word umotza, and in the sense that it suddenly happens that he loses his possession, he loses the money that he has, okay? So he says, prat lemotzui,
this excludes someone who has property, as we'll see in a second, that's how they understand it, and he didn't want to sell that other property. What the Matsui says, Shelo Yimkor, right? Verochok, Yigo Bekorok. In other words, he shouldn't sell. If a man owns two properties, then he shouldn't sell a property, let's say, which is at a distance, but redeem that which is, you know, near to him. Or to sell a property which is a worse property, the Yigo Beyofa, and, you know, redeem a better property. In other words, what shouldn't he be doing? He should not be taking advantage of the law by, you know, keeping a property that he has and pleading poverty, you know, for the other one that he sold. In other words, the law is in order to protect those who are, you know, stricken with poverty. But if you have the means, don't take advantage of it. If you have two different fields, don't take advantage of it. So, what is it? So it means, in other words, then, that motzo would imply that it would either have to be, it just happened, right? Or, if it didn't just happen, but it has, then in that particular case. So the same thing with the stone, we would have to say. If, when he threw the stone, right, there was nobody else over there, so this was accidental.
The stone.
Right. But, if the guy was already there and he throws a stone, then obviously,
like
he cannot,
before
he threw
exactly, the stone.
Yeah. He cannot claim the protection. So Omarova Hocha Min Yono the Krod, Hosa Min Yono the Krod. In other words, from the situation that we find in one text and the situation we find in the other text. In other words, you have to go by what is the situation in the text itself. Hosa Min Yono the Krod, Umotso, he says, Dum Yove Hisigo Yode. The word Motso is tantamount to the idea that, you know, Hisigo Yode, which means that he has the wherewithal, he has the property. My Siga Yodo Mehashto, just as in the case of Hisiga Yodo, it applies to right now he has it. So Af Motsa Name Mehashto. So likewise, the business of throwing the stone, that it happens that it, you know, the we're talking about you know, where person was already there who eventually is going to be hit. But Hochamin Yona de Kro, Motsa Dumi in the Yar. But in our latter case, it, you could compare it to the situation about going into the forest. Mayar mide de ise miyakora, just as the forest exists to begin with. So afamotso name mide de ise miyakora. So likewise, we have to say that the same thing is to begin with. All right, I think we'll stop at this particular point, and we shall continue in Yetz Hashem next week. And
we are on
okay, right.
Daf Ches.
Yeah, so we are now on Daf Ches towards the bottom of Omid Aleph,
yeah.
And we recite a Kaddish to Rabbanon. So
October 25th, 1995.
Right. Everybody have the place.
Now, what page would that be?
Okay, we're this would be 15.
15. About yeah. How far down?
Approximately a quarter from the bottom.
Four lines from the bottom.
Yeah.
12.
Yeah.
12 lines?
A quarter, right. In other words, three quarters of the page from the top and a quarter of the page from the bottom.
12.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, it says over there, Hazirikas Heaven, but in reality, the heading should have been a little bit different because we're dealing now not with the first part of the, you know, the previous part of the Mishnah, but we're dealing now with trying to understand the latter part of the Mishnah. Specifically, if you remember the Mishnah, on, you know, further up on the page over there, right?
Yeah.
It says about Abba Shaul over there, okay? What did Abba Shaul say? Abba Shaul, Omer ma hatovas eitzim reshus af kol reshus. In other words, just as we say that exile is ordained by the Torah for a person, you know, who was chopping wood in the forest, and you know, and he accidentally, of course, as we defined it, you know, namely with a lower, you know, going downward stroke or something like that, you know, it killed a person.
The axe
unfortunately,
flew off the
yes,
handle,
Yeah, the axe fell off or whatever it may be. Exactly. Yeah, we said that before. So just as we say that this is reshus, in other words, it occurs with something voluntary, so likewise it says ap kol reshus. So likewise, wherever the situation is purely voluntary, so then if an accident, you know, if manslaughter occurs, then in that case the person who has committed the act of manslaughter, you know, should go into golus, right? But said Abba Shaul, he says Yotzo of Hamakes Benoi, right? This excludes the case of a father who strikes his son, the Harav Harudes Talmido, or the Rebbe who shmeises his Talmid, and Shaliach Bezdin, and also the emissary of the Bezdin, whose job it was in order to inflict the punishment that the Bezdin had ordered. In all of these cases, if the father happened to strike his son, and you know, inadvertently, good evening, Sam. I told him that we were waiting for your return.
Welcome back.
Yes, made it back.
Good. Okay, we're in Daf Ches right now.
Page 16.
You want to show Sam? Right, there we are. Yeah.
12 lines from the bottom.
Right. At the moment, we're reviewing what the Mishnah had to say for the purposes of the discussion. All right. So then we said that according to Rav Papa, right? According to Abba Shaul, who's the person who's quoted in the Mishnah, right? Afterwards, we'll see that the question was raised, you know, to some of the sages of the Gemara, you know, in order to understand it. So they say, a father is permitted to strike his son, right? Naturally, why? Because, you know, he has to instill in him discipline. Okay. Now, what would happen if he hit him so hard, but unintentionally, of course, you know, but he would hit his son and then kill him? Then in that particular case, we say that he does not go into exile. Why? Because in reality he was performing a mitzvah, and as in performing the mitzvah, then in that case there is an extenuating circumstance in order to keep him, you know, from going
into... What was the mitzvah? Hitting his son was a mitzvah?
No. Hitting his son was a mitzvah. We'll find out.
I mean, disciplining his son.
Disciplining, right. And this happened
correcting
only...
Correcting him.
Right.
Correcting.
Exactly. Now the same thing for the other two cases that they mentioned. Namely... excuse me, where it says that you know, Harav Haruda is Talmido, the case of the teacher, you know, who has to discipline his student, and he gives him such a clock, you know, that, and so I mean, today he would not only lose his job, but probably have all kinds of suits against him, right? But in those days it was considered, you know, a meritorious act, that if you saw that the student wasn't learning, you give him mashmais. I mean, you remember the old story about the Rebbe with what they would call the conchik? The conchik is, you know, it's like a whip.
I got shmeised.
Right?
Joshua can't hit us plenty of times.
I get a ruler.
Oh, right. He had a long pointer. Ruler. A long pointer.
Pointer, a ruler or something, right? And, you know, in order to get you to concentrate,
that's
and
right,
to learn.
It worked.
And the third case mentioned over there is the Shliach Bezdin, and the Bezdin, let's say, sentences a man that he should get Malkus, okay? So this guy is the person who has to carry out the sentence. And he starts in to give the guy Malkus, and let's say that they said he has to get 39, and
gets halfway through, the guy has a heart attack.
Right, guy dies. So in that case, all of these three, we say they were performing a mitzvah, therefore they have an extenuating circumstance in order to keep them from going into exile.
Want something?
I'm sucking on something. Doesn't seem to help. Okay.
Get a lifesaver.
Well, I got the Ricola tablet, but it's health dish. Going to have to take Sam's
sugar
advice and
they
try something
sugar
else. Sam told me earlier that in his case, try something called chloroseptic, right?
Chloroseptic.
So I'll go to the drugstore and take a look. F. Shabbat is helping. All right. So this is what the Mishnah was saying. So now they begin to question, you know, the premise of this. So one of the rabbis asked Rav the following question. It says, where do you derive, you know, the fact that chopping the wood is only a voluntary act? Because remember, what did we say? We said that according to the Torah, something happens, you know, during the time that they were chopping wood and somebody gets killed accidentally, then in that particular case, punishment is gone. That's right. So he says, Dilmo, he says, maybe Bechatovas Eitzim, the Sukkah, Bechatovas Eitzim, Ma'arocha. It says that maybe we're talking about a case where the chopping of wood would seem to be for a mitzvah. As for example, you chop wood in order to be able to construct a sukkah. Or you chop wood in order to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, and because they had donations of firewood. This is what we learned to remember in Tainus, that, you know, they had the various mishmaros and so on.
That's right.
And, you know, certain families would have the privilege of bringing the firewood to the Beis HaMikdash on a certain designated day in the cycle of the year.
I can't find it. Where am I looking at?
Yeah. You see the line? Where's the line?
No, it's on the other side of the page.
This page.
This page?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. No, you're on it. 12. You're on the wrong.
14. This is page 14?
Yeah, so this will be 15.
Yeah, over here.
Over here, but whereabouts?
Down towards the bottom right now.
Let's see.
Right
about
him.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn it around
there. Let's see where we are. Right here, this line here.
Right here.
Okay. Straight line with this line.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And
maybe
now
line after that too.
Right. The question now that he's raising is this. I mean, so far we've spoken about, you know, we said that the example of chopping wood in the forest is in order to teach us before, you know, as we said, that just as a forest is a place where people can go into, but they do it on a voluntary basis, right?
Yeah.
And so therefore, if circumstances are such, you know, that unfortunately there is a fatality, and in that particular case, so, you know, it's written in the Torah that who yonus alachasu moel avachai, right? That the person who committed the manslaughter, he is to flee to one of the cities of refuge, right? And he'll be able to preserve his life over there so that he would not incur the vengeance of the goel hadon, right? The family, you know, is seeking vengeance. So the question then that was raised by this student